called the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 17, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
All right. Chair Hansen is present. Vice Chair Wasowick?
Wasowick present.
Lead Heinzman?
Present.
Representative Acomb?
Present.
Representative Ackland?
Ackland present.
Representative Backer?
Backer present.
Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Representative Ackland?
Present.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher present.
Representative Green is excused. Representative Igo?
Igo present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan present.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler present.
Representative Lee?
Lee present.
Representative Lippert?
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick is excused. Representative Morrison?
Morrison present.
Representative Nelson?
Nelson present.
All right. And Representative Tice is excused. There is a quorum.
A quorum is present. Representative Nelson, would you like to move the minutes for February 15th?
Yes, I will move the minutes from February 15th.
Representative Nelson moves the minutes for February 15th, 2022. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Our first bill up this morning is one that I have authored, so I'm going to pass the puck over to Representative Wasowick, Vice Chair, to run the meeting while I present the bill.
All right. It's actually afternoon, but we'll go with that. Rep. Hansen, would you like to move your bill, House File 2917?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 2917 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
All right. Representative Hansen, would you like to... Are you going to have testifiers explain the bill? Do you want to do that? What is the plan here? I just want to make
sure. Let me just give a little bit of orientation and presentation on the bill, Madam Chair and members. House File 2917 is a bill to right a past wrong. Over 20 years ago, there was an effort to capture the lottery and lieu funds for the lottery and use those for outdoor projects. And what happened when we ran into budget difficulties in the early 2000s, the 97% that was originally allocated for these outdoor projects was cut back once and then cut back again to 72.43%. So what this bill does is it restores that to its original intent of 97%. That would add at this time about $13 million additional dollars into the programs. Heritage enhancement, the zoos, metro parks, a number of projects where these dedicated with a small D funds are used throughout the state of Minnesota. We have assembled a broad coalition of testifiers today, both who have provided written testimony and then will be testifying in person or virtually. And we also have folks that are available for questions. I would encourage members before we start, just to look at the last written testimony. And there is a letter from former Senator Bob Lessard, former DNR Commissioner Mark Holston, and former co-author of the original work, Bob Milbert, who referenced what was done to try to get additional dollars at that time for the outdoors and how it had been cut back and we need to restore it. I'd ask for your support and ask for you to co-author the bill. I think this is an important thing where we can restore and right a past wrong. And we have a number of people who will testify to that effect. So Madam Chair, back to you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And just for members note, we're gonna be having several testifiers and then we'll take questions on anything at the end. So first up, I have Sarah Giochetto. I'm sure I butchered your last name, so if you can introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Chiquetto. I am a Deputy Director of the St. Louis and Lake Counties Regional Railroad Authority. I'm here today to testify on behalf of our support for HF 2917. Besides owning and maintaining the Lakefront Line Railroad that runs from Duluth to Two Harbors, the Rail Authority has also proudly built and now maintains a 156-mile Mesabi Trail that extends from the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids to the Boundary Waters in Ely. The state of Minnesota and the LCCMR have been excellent partners in building this unique and scenic paved trail that connects 28 communities across two counties. While this trail is not a state-designated trail sponsored by the DNR, we have benefited from your support, and that is why we wholeheartedly support HF 2917, a bill that will increase funds for the state DNR parks and trails, as well as trails in the metro area. In our experience, people, especially now post-pandemic, are taking advantage of the opportunities that parks and trails provide to get out and enjoy the outdoors. As technology advances and the need for parks and trails also increases. So while we may not be eligible for most of the increased funds, we still support these efforts because parks and trails benefit all Minnesotans, including our trail guests, and encourage a healthy lifestyle. This legislature and you, Mr. Chair, have been thoughtful in your approach to providing these resources. Minnesotans have a great respect for the outdoors and for recreational opportunities, whether that means boats, snowmobiles, and ATVs, or bikes, hiking, and camping. When the opportunity arises, we should all collectively support these good works because our fellow citizens applaud them, use them, and we all benefit from them. On behalf of the Mesabi Trail, we support HF 2917. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Al Bangura from Minneapolis Park Board. You could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Al Bangura, and I'm the superintendent of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And I have the honor of speaking today on behalf of the 10 Metro Regional Park implementing agencies. And those include Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington counties, and the cities of Bloomington, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. I want to really personally thank, of course, for all of us Metro Parks, to thank Chair Hansen for carrying this bill. Metro Parks play a key role in the state system of parks. Metro Regional Parks are the state equivalent to the DNR parks. The parks have contributed to serve an especially significant role during the pandemic, providing both physical and mental health benefits for residents and non-resident visitors. The Metro Regional Parks are grateful to be part of what has helped to provide enjoyment and escape during these trying and very difficult times. More than 63 million visits were made to the 10 metro regional systems in 2019, and we have seen an exceptional increase in park usage due to COVID. We will have our official 2021 visitor accounts this summer, and I guarantee none of us will be surprised when the report comes out that we collectively had more than 80 million user visits in our regional parks last year. In 1988, the voters approved a constitutional amendment to permit a lottery with the proceeds from the state from the sale of lottery tickets to go to protect legislatures, protect the environment, and promote the outdoors. In the 1990s, the Minnesota legislature implemented a payment in lieu of sales tax on the sale of lottery tickets and placed those dollars in the state general fund. In 2000, the legislature dedicated 97% of those proceeds from that payment in lieu of sales tax to the Heritage Enhancement Account at the DNR to promote hunting and fishing programs in the Game and Fish Fund and for the parks and trails at the DNR and the Metro Parks to promote outdoor recreation. Over time, that dedication of 97% was reduced to 72.43%. HF 2917 moves to restore the 97% that was promised 22 years ago. It takes $112 million a year to operate, maintain our metro regional parks and trails. It costs each agency about $1.50 each time someone visits our parks and trails. So just to put it in context, it's probably the best value of our collective health you can find. And I'm sure it's probably the cheapest health club on the planet. And we're very proud of that. So Minnesota statute provides that the state will pay 40% of the actual costs for the operation and maintenance for the metro parks and trails. The allocation to the metro system from the state's general fund has been closer to 8% versus the 40% allocation that the state promised. Actual costs have risen, but appropriations have stayed flat over the years. Metro parks have not gotten the 40% promised by the state, but this measure will truly help. The metro park's share of these increased proceeds will be only 22.5% of the total. This amounts to about $2.6 million a year increase. While this is not enormous, it is very meaningful. And if the legislator will commit more money to these great parks, I can guarantee and promise you it'll be the best value ever. So all of the metro park systems are world-class. We may not have the oceans and the mountains that other states have, but all of our metro and DNR parks have lakes, streams, forests, trails, and vistas beyond compare, and one of that Minnesotans hold dear to their hearts. So please support HF 2917 so we have the resources to keep these treasured assets and maintained forever. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next up, we have Mike Verhoeven with the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Minnesota. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Verhoeven. I'm here today to represent the Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Minnesota, values the traditions, culture, and opportunities that our wild spaces support. In particular, we try to stand up and speak for our wild lands, waters, and critters. The last 2 years have seen tremendous increases in the use of our public lands and waters. And this legislation will not only support, help to fund the stresses that have been put on those lands by hunters and anglers, but will also help to offer undeveloped spaces for all Minnesotans to connect to the outdoors. Like most of North America, Minnesota's landscapes are now dominated by development, and our public lands are some of the last places to find valuable yet rare ecosystems. And so this funding will go a long way in the fight to retain places on our landscape where wild lands, waters, and wildlife can serve each Minnesotan. And finally, with our Department of Natural Resources constantly falling behind in the fight to maintain these natural assets, and 87% of these dollars, or a section of these dollars directed to go to field operations with the Department of Natural Resources, these dollars are set up to serve us in meaningful boots on the ground conservation work. And that's extremely valuable to everyone in Minnesota using these public lands assets. So our support for HF 2917 is rooted in the hope that these dollars will help to ensure high quality outdoor recreation is available for every Minnesotan, and that our wild places will continue to thrive with proper support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next up, we have Stephanie Pinkala from the Nature Conservancy. You could introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wasowick, and thank you, committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Stephanie Pinkala, and I work for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota, where we work to protect the lands and waters on which all life depends so people and nature can thrive. The Nature Conservancy supports House File 2917. The state's record budget surplus provides a much overdue opportunity to restore the historic dedication of lottery and LUF funds that are just a part of our puzzle in Minnesota to adequately fund nature. The dedicated percentage that appears in statute currently was, as you've heard, the result of an emergency action taken during funding deficits. Fortunately, our state is no longer facing a financial emergency, and we can reverse this emergency measure that was taken so many years ago. In light of our current financial health, Minnesota should reinstate this dedication as it was first established. Now is a critical time for us to be directing funds toward natural resources when we know that greater investment is needed for our air quality, water quality, iconic wildlife, and our community's resilience to climate change. Obviously, in the pandemic, a record number of Minnesotans have turned to the outdoors, but more than ever before, we are seeing the many essential benefits that nature provides for public health and well-being, in addition to the benefits for wildlife, water, carbon sequestration, and more on our natural lands. Increased recreation in our city, county, and state parks not only helps improve health outcomes, but grows our tourism economy and supports livelihoods all around the state. We know we're already experiencing the impacts of climate change in our cities, in our towns, and in rural communities, and restoring or returning this lottery in lieu dedication to its historic level will help restore much needed funding to do work in Minnesota's natural lands and areas. One of the benefits being that they will store carbon and help us adapt to the effects of climate change. But we thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this important bill forward to help maximize all of the funding that we can for nature. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Dan Jambor from Presidents Forever Ramsey County. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to testify, and thank you to the chair and to the committee members. So my name is Daniel Jambor. I'm a lifelong resident of St. Paul in Ramsey County. I'm a fly fisherman, a firearm safety instructor through the Minnesota DNR, and vice president of the Minnesota Decoy and Wildfowl Carving Club. And again, I am also president of the Ramsey County chapter of Pheasants Forever. And so I'm testifying today on behalf of both Ramsey County chapter of Pheasants Forever and the many, many other chapters throughout the state of Minnesota on this important issue. Pheasants Forever is in full support and grateful to Representative Hansen for House File 2917. I'm going to keep it very brief. In 2000, obviously, the legislature dedicated 97% of the lottery in lieu funds towards heritage enhancement, state parks, trails, and zoos. And then during a time of extreme budget deficit, that was the rationale for reducing it. But as has been stated and everybody understands, now in this time of very significant budget surplus, the time is right to reinstate the original commitment to the residents of Minnesota. I'm active in the outdoors, both fly fishing in southeast Minnesota, pheasant hunting throughout the entire bottom third, and grouse hunting in the north central. And I've personally witnessed over the last couple of years the increased use of our natural resources. We're blessed in the fact that in St. Paul, I've seen a lot more, of the underserved communities who have taken refuge going to the outdoors to get a release from some of the trials and tribulations that we've gone through. But that does put more stresses on the resources that we have. So I believe there's a greater need, a greater value in these funds now than even when it was originally committed in 2000. So again, Pheasants Forever is fully committed and in support of House File 2917. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee and appreciate this time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have folks available to help questions, as Representative Hansen said earlier. So now with the testifiers complete, we will move to member questions. If you have a question, raise your hand.
Vice Chair Wasluck, Ms. Taylor caught something that we may need to resolve if Ms. Taylor could mention that. And
Ms. Taylor?
Madam Chair and members, when I was reading the fiscal note, I noticed that the effective date was August 1. And since this has a fiscal impact, we traditionally would have an effective date of July 1 just to start with the fiscal year. So at some point, an effective date of July 1 would be
Prudent. Thank you, Ms. Taylor. I'm not seeing any member hands popping up there. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to first thank Representative Hansen for taking up this issue. And we did get to talk offline a little bit and had an opportunity to get a heads up on this coming, and that's appreciated. I am curious, since it is obviously a tax bill and the path is for it to be, I think, laid over, kind of what are we thinking and what's the plan? That would be helpful.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heintzman, I talked with Chair Marquardt, and he said he did not need to see it because it's an existing lottery in lieu of it's changing that allocation. The issue will probably come in ways and means because it is ongoing, not one-time money in the base. So it, instead of, and that will probably have to be dealt with in our budget target. But it's, he said he didn't believe it was a tax bill and he didn't need to see it.
Representative Heintzman, any follow-up?
No, Madam Chair, that was kind of what we thought might be the case, but wanted to confirm that. Don't want this to get hung up because of a technicality.
I see Representative Jordan's hand up. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this bill forward. I'm a newer member of the legislature, and I think I'd appreciate a little bit of a history lesson about how this bill came to be. And I do know that Mr. Rice from Minneapolis is here and was involved in that. So I don't know, Chair, if you can educate us on that or if it would be good to let someone else talk a little bit about the history of this issue.
Representative Hansen, do you want to take that or should we turn that over to someone else?
Well, I know that Mr. Rice is waiting patiently, so I think we should give him that opportunity, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Rice, if you want to unmute yourself and introduce yourself and provide some information for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will be quick. My name is Brian Rice. I represent the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and Superintendent Bangora gave excellent testimony for the committee. And really, thanks to you, Representative Hansen, and all the committee for doing this. You heard a letter that was read by Representative Hansen, signed by Bob Lessard, Mark Holstein, and Bob Milbert, and that just brought back a flood of memories on this bill and why it's so vital, important. The effort to pass the legacy amendment started with Bob Lessard in 1999. The Constitution was amended in the 1998 election to guarantee the right to hunt and fish. Senator Lessard wanted to validate that by reaching out and providing money to the DNR, the Outdoor Heritage Account, the Great Outdoors. We worked with him at that time, we meaning Metro Parks, DNR Parks, the Trails Division of DNR, to basically fund this Great Outdoors that we so much all appreciate. And while the legacy amendment took another 10 years to get implemented, what was able to happen in that session at a time of big surplus, this was before the dot-com bubble, the legislature took this money that was lottery, and the lottery was intended to enhance the environment, but along the way, the legislature grabbed its piece by imposing a tax in lieu of sales tax on lottery tickets. The name and only Minnesota calls it New Prague. We call it lottery in lieu, but it's a shorthand for what happened many years ago. But they captured that back for the Great Outdoors and for environmental purposes. And I can't tell the legislature how very, very important it is. And this committee probably understands it. But for the Heritage Enhancement Account, and if you read that language in the DNR Heritage Enhancement Account, that language is now in our Constitution as the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Accounts. The monies that you get appropriated to that, Representative Jordan, in your legacy committee, this is what provides the operations for a lot of that stuff that the DNR does. And it's so easy to see the shiny new thing, but we need the money to keep up with what we have, and getting a dedicated source of revenue, and I'm Chair Hansen, you understand this, having that in your budget year after year where you can plan for it and predict it and you can rely on it is just so vital. And you know, this isn't going to be the grand slam home run of home runs, but in time, over time, this was so meaningful to the Game and Fish Fund, to to the DNR Parks and Trails Fund, to our Metro Fund, that really I'm very excited. And when I saw Bob Lessard's name and Commissioner Holston, all people who were around who made Commissioner Holston had your job, Representative Hansen, back 22 years ago. It's a great bipartisan Metro DNR. I mean, I hope you can all unite on it, and I hope that it's possible to get this done. And it's a great history of our state, and this really was what Lessard and Holstein and those folks did 22 years ago, led to the legacy amendment. And we might have differences there, but it's made how great this state is. And thank you for bringing it forward, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Representative Jordan, did you have any follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Rice, for that answer. It's just very clear that our parks and our outdoors and the money we spend on this is something that really does make all of our lives better. So thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this forward.
Any other member questions? Not seeing any hands going up. Representative Hansen, any closing remarks?
Madam Chair, I don't know if Commissioner Meyer has anything to add.
Commissioner Meyer, are you?
Mr. Chairman or Madam Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, I think the testifiers did a great job describing how we ended up in this situation and certainly the need for funding in these activities is, as you know, needed and well-deserved. So thank you for your work on this issue.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Representative Hansen, any closing remarks on this?
I would, I think we see a broad coalition in support of righting this past wrong. We can provide some dollars. We're not changing how they're allocated. We often hear about dividing the pie at the legislature. And this is truly not dividing the pie different, but making the pie bigger so everybody is able to get a part of that. So the coalition can hold, it's broad, it's diverse, it's statewide. I'd ask for your support and ask for you to co-author the bill as we lay this over, and we'll move it forward in the future.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 2917 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. And with that, I will turn the virtual gavel back over to Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next up, we have Representative Fisher with House File 2908, Certified Salt Applicator Program Established. Representative Fisher, would you move that House File 2908 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to recommend that House File 2908 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee.
Representative Fisher, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2908 bill to address water quality, setting up a certified salt applicator program. And this is a policy bill to address improving the quality and protecting the quality of our water resources. And one thing I'd like to acknowledge is something that I've missed when we used to be in person. When we were in person, we used to have classes that would come through that we acknowledge out there. And I'll say that I'm aware that there's a class following us today from the Water Resource Center, Dr. Jeff Peterson's class. So I want to recognize that they're out there. And this is important policy in water. So I want to make sure that we try to keep that tradition going. So I say hello to them and hope they learn a few things as we're going through the process today. So House File 2908 is a bill that is virtually identical to House File 1502 from the last session that deals with certification for salt applicators program. This is to help address the salt / chloride issue that we're seeing in the state waters in Minnesota. The Environment Quality Board, in one of their past reports, had highlighted the fact that data is showing that chloride levels in our surface waters and our groundwaters are continuing to increase across the state of Minnesota. And in certain areas, we have a number of water bodies that are already exceeding the levels of chloride in their waters. One of the biggest sources where chloride comes in from is either salt
de-icing chemicals that are applied on our roads, our sidewalks, our parking lots. The other source of chlorides out there can also come from water softeners. This bill is taking a look at what can we do to help address the amount that is being put on the roads, because that is usually the largest amount across the state of Minnesota. We have found that through experience, when people have taken the certified salt applicator class that has been offered by the MPCA, that we've seen dramatic reductions in the amount of chlorides and salt being used. Reductions can be from 40 to 50, even 70% being reduced, which helps keep and protect our waters clean and lower the amount of chlorides ending up in our waters. One of the things that the Environment Quality Board's report had set out is that the voluntary solution of getting people through qualified applicator programs is significantly improves and has a significant impact on reducing those levels. One of the other things that the report mentioned is that there's a regulatory side, is that there are some people that are hesitant, particularly in the private sector, that if the state were to help limit, have some limited liability for private applicators and businesses who go through these courses, become certified and follow all the processes, that that would increase the number of people, number of businesses taking these classes, and at the same time having more educated applicators out there, that would then reduce the salt load while keeping things safer. So the bill I have before us today does two things. The first thing it does is it establishes the certified program, the voluntary certified program, as best management practices, and outlines what needs to be done to meet those conditions. And then number two, which set up a condition for limited liability if people were properly following the program, were certified, and did the proper documentation. Now, the focus of this committee will not be on the liability, because that will be at the next stop for the judiciary and civil law. So our focus today is going to be on setting up the voluntary certified program of best management practices. I will say that this bill will have a fiscal note on it that has been provided. It would be $355,000 in the first year and $350,000 in the second year. I do have also a number of testifiers here and would like to be able to turn it over to testifiers and then take questions afterwards, if that's okay with the chair. Thank you, Representative Fisher. The first testifier is Dr. Dale Gentry, Audubon, Minnesota Conservation Manager. Dr. Gentry, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Dr. Dale Gentry. I am the Conservation Manager for Audubon, Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to offer some testimony today. The wildlife that Minnesotans hold so dear and that Audubon strives to conserve are dependent on an interconnected food web that requires healthy air, water, and soils. Eagles, loons, and herons eat the fish that eat the amphibians and microorganisms at the bottom of the food chain that depend on healthy fresh water. Warblers and sparrows eat the insects that eat the plants that require healthy soil to grow. In environments with adequate healthy soil and water, populations are relatively stable and thrive. However, a growing body of research finds that road salts are making their way into our soils, groundwater, and surface water, throwing these systems out of balance and negatively affecting human interests and wildlife. A recent study of Twin Cities lakes found sodium and chloride levels 10 and 25% higher, respectively, than levels in non-urban lakes. And with these high levels, we can measure a reduction in diversity and abundance of zooplankton, affecting the bottom of the food web and contributing to algae blooms. Many small fish and amphibians are less healthy and survive at lower rates, making less food available for larger fish. The salt can also alter water density and inhibit the seasonal turnover of water in the spring, affecting nutrient availability in our lakes. In addition to the food web and lake hydrology, many large vertebrates pursue salt, and we see higher incidences of vehicle collisions with deer, moose, and many other small and medium-sized mammals and birds on roads that are treated with salt. We have documented widespread wildlife declines in the past century. Most notably, from Audubon's perspective, our continent has 3 billion fewer birds than it did in 1970, And we know that freshwater ecosystems are critical to the well-being of these wildlife and humans. Because road salt is an economical and effective de-icer that reduces the risk of driving in winter, we're not asking that we stop its use. However, Audubon Minnesota does support programs that require training to help reduce the amount of salt in our environment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before the committee today.
Thank you, and we will hold questions until the end of the testimony. Connie Fortin, Bolton and Mink, welcome, and introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Connie Fortin. I'm a senior project manager for Bolton and Mink. I'm pleased to be able to testify today. I've spent 25 years working on chloride reduction strategies. I've developed and taught the Smart Salting certification courses for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I've written all the manuals that accompany these training classes. I've been in front of more than 20,000 winter maintenance professionals teaching them smart salting strategies. And I've been telling them about the huge chloride problems that we're faced in Minnesota and ways that we can move winter maintenance from more is better to a precision industry. I'm viewed as a leader in chloride reform across the United States. MPCA is also viewed as a leader across the nation with their smart salting training program. We're highly respected on this proactive work on chloride reduction strategies. We are number one without a doubt. It's time for our elected officials to help us. We need help with the private side of winter maintenance and helping them reduce salt use. The training program is wonderful. We need to support it. And the limited liability legislation is also very important to help us work with that private side. Now, Minnesota is the most progressive state in understanding the chloride problem and taking action. Last year, the MPCA released a statewide chloride management plan, asking every single person in Minnesota to reduce their salt use. It's the first of its kind in the nation, and all the other cold weather states are watching us. Now, because we've been doing training for about 15 years in Minnesota, we have some good news from the United States Geological Survey. When they looked at our groundwater rate of chloride contamination from 1990 to 2010, we saw huge increases, and that was the same across the Snow Belt all the way to the East Coast. When they monitored again in 2010 to 2020, Minnesota's rate of contamination had shrunk significantly. So I believe it's because we have had the opportunity to get out there and talk to more people about this situation. We can see it's working. Now, the early estimates of chloride loading produced by Heinz Steffen in the St. Anthony Falls labs told us that the seven most populated counties in Minnesota, the salt use was pretty equal between MnDOT, the counties, the cities, and the private sector, essentially us all contributing about a fourth of the chloride loading in these urban areas. Now, we've seen some pretty good changes by city, county, and state operations, but we have not seen the same rate of change in the private sector. And that's why we really need some help getting them to the table. Why are we having problems? You know, they're afraid. They're afraid if they don't put the salt down 2 inches thick that they're going to end up in court and their company will be closed. They know they don't need to put the salt down that thick, right? We need to give them a reason, a better reason, and a reward for acting responsibly. If you're in doubt of this huge chloride loading, go to the grocery store, go to the pharmacy, go to any restaurant tonight and take a look around, and you will see seas of salt that are unnecessary. So I would just encourage you all to join the leadership our state has already shown in this chloride reduction. Help us support the training, help us get some relief for the private side with the liability. I appreciate all the good work you do to protect our state. We're counting on you to move this forward. And we have 10,000 really good reasons to pass this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sue Nissen, Stop Oversalting. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. I want to thank Representative Fisher for this important legislation. My name is Sue Nissen. I'm a Minnesota water steward, and I'm a citizen volunteer with Stop Oversalting. We're in support of House File 2908 because we think it's good for clean water, it's good for our infrastructure, it's good for our private winter maintenance applicators, as Connie just mentioned, and it's going to maintain public safety. And so here's a little more about that. I don't always have my 5-gallon Home Depot bucket, but I have it here today along with a teaspoon. And the reason is this teaspoon full of de-icer will fill this bucket full of water so that it's at that water is at the EPA impairment limit for aquatic life. It takes just a little bit of de-icer to do a lot of damage. And our waters, as Representative Fisher said, are becoming saltier and saltier every year. And part of the problem we think is once that de-icer is dissolved, nobody sees it anymore in our lakes and streams, but it is absolutely still there. The data is in. We've got 50 water bodies above the impairment standard, 75 more close to that standard. And groundwater and drinking water monitoring wells are showing upward trends. For our infrastructure, damage per ton is estimated between $800 and $3,300. Annual road salt estimates are huge, 400,000 tons a year in Minnesota. That's a lot of teaspoons of de-icer. So Stop Oversalting volunteers, what we do is we frequently talk with commercial applicators and property managers in our communities. We can tell you that many aren't trained in best practice, and overwhelmingly, there is this belief that more salt brings more safety. The combination is driving over-application. We also find those same applicators are acutely aware of chloride's destructive sides. They love their lakes. They are really worried about the future of fishing, and they're frustrated about the wasteful infrastructure damage and landscape repairs every year. However, at the end of the day, these same applicators need to protect their small businesses, and currently over-applying does just that. So the opportunity for the liability protection is an incentive for the commercial applicators to enroll in MPCA's highly effective smart salt training. It's a voluntary program. It teaches science-based best practice. We Stop Oversalters, we attend the trainings too, and we see applicators in those trainings get really excited about their expanding knowledge and go back to their companies and come up with strategies to reduce chlorides but maintain public safety. And a great example is Rochester's Mayo Clinic, who reported 60% reductions in a year when Rochester received a record amount of snow. So Stop Oversalting's hope for Minnesota is that every teaspoon of de-icer is gonna count in a positive way. This bill is a real and necessary step in that direction, and we ask you for your support of House File 2908. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next up is Nadia Alsadi, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is Nadia Alsadi. I am the Water Policy Associate at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. MCEA supports this bill, House File 2908, to take measured yet significant steps towards addressing this environmental problem. Salt pollution is a problem throughout the entire state, and particularly in areas with high impervious surface cover. Chlorides from de-icers and salts can be a problem with stormwater runoff and can accumulate in lakes, streams, and groundwater. Once chlorides have entered a water body, there is no practical way to remove it. This is a problem for all of Minnesota, which currently has 50 chloride-impaired water bodies, and 75 more considered high risk. This bill protects Minnesota water bodies from further salt pollution by providing incentives for salt applicators to receive formal training on smarter salting procedures. This bill will help advance public education as it relates to these issues. The smart salting training that has been offered and provided through the MPCA and Fortin Consulting is an effective tool for educating maintenance professionals on smart salting practices. As a previous Green Corps member with the MPCA, I participated in this training and gained valuable knowledge on practical, safe, and cost-effective ways to reduce salt overuse and pollution. The smart salting training describes the impacts of the overuse of salt on our roadways and sidewalks. As Sue had mentioned, it only takes 1 teaspoon of salt to permanently pollute 5 gallons of water. The smart salting training also describes how the use of salt on particularly colder days, for example, is far less impactful, and how more efficient snow management can be more cost-effective. Unless we take proactive measures on the front end by providing education to salt applicators and maintenance professionals, more of Minnesota's prized waters will become impaired. In closing, I would like to remind everyone that salt is widely overused and overapplied in Minnesota. The permanent impacts from this overuse is a problem that must be addressed now. I encourage everyone to consider smarter salting practices and training and to address this issue in part by moving this bill forward. Thank you.
That is it for testifiers. We do have Dave Benke from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency available for questions. Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may have been addressed in the testimony and maybe I missed it, but I'm wondering, Representative Fisher, or maybe some one of the testifiers could talk about what are alternatives to salting. So I think Ms. Wharton mentioned liability, and other folks brought it up as well, that that was a concern going forward as to why people oversalt is because they don't want to have someone, for example, slip and get injured and then be liable for that. It looks like Ms. Wharton has her hand up, but if she or others could provide some information on what some alternatives are, I think that would be really helpful.
Ms. Wharton.
Thank you, Chair and representatives. There are many strategies for us to move from a more is better salt use to precision. There is not a silver bullet or absolutely safe product, but what the big trend right now is to move away from granular de-icers and into liquid de-icers. Liquid de-icers are over 70% water. So Shingle Creek, which is our first water to be impaired, needs a 71% reduction in chlorides to be come back to life. If we simply eliminated granular de-icers and went with liquids in that watershed, we'd be very close to solving that problem. That's just one example, but there's a lot of different strategies, techniques that are going to reduce but not eliminate the problem.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up. Are there concerns about making that transition? Is it less effective? Is it more expensive? I am just sort of wondering, like, if we know that that will be helpful, what is it? Is it an education issue? What seems to be the stumbling block for us moving more folks to that liquid de-icer?
Ms. Fortin.
Thank you, Chair and representatives. It's a culture change. It's like if somebody wanted us to change the way we brush our teeth, we have to know about it. We have to know about the new tools, and we have to maybe have some encouragement and incentive. We have to understand it's going to be safe and effective. And it's a learning process. So it's every single person that does winter maintenance could shift into liquids if we can hold their hand, encourage them, and get them there.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answers to the questions. That's all I have.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question might be for Ms. Al-Saadi, but I'll have a follow-up for the bill author as well. Ms. Al-Saadi, you said in your testimony about the number 50 impaired lakes are in the state, I believe, and that are on the list, and that it's a growing problem. Can you tell me where the concentration of those impaired lakes are in relationship to the state of Minnesota?
Ms. Al-Saadi. Yeah.
Thank you. Great question. I don't have a map in front of me at this time, but I know that the MPCA does have maps available that list and show the chloride impairments. Typically, chloride impairments will be around impervious surface cover. So, for example, I think Brownie Lake is one that we've mentioned that is particularly impaired. And there's some other specific examples, but usually around areas that have a lot of impervious surface cover.
Representative Eklund, would you like the MPCA to comment on that?
Possible if they could, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Al-Saadi.
Mr. Benke, introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Benke, Director of the Resource Management and Assistance Division at the Pollution Control Agency. And for the most part, it is around those areas with a lot of impervious surface, and you might attribute those to more urban areas rather than the rural areas. We've got another issue, though. It might just be because we've got a lot of data around those streams and rivers compared to the others. So any place that salt's being applied, I think, deserves the reduction efforts, not only for now, but into the future. But we can provide some of that data for you in terms of where we see those. And those are 75, you know, surface and waters across the state that are near the standard. Most of those are from the metro area, but we'd be glad to provide that to you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Benke. And then maybe this final question, and I'll have a comment afterwards, is for Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, what kind of reception are you getting from the municipalities and counties down in the metro area for this bill?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund. I have not heard lots of input from the counties and the cities. I've heard a little bit. And what they're happy to see is that we're putting a program out there that will help get the privates on board, because many of the cities, the counties, the government units are already moving in this direction and have been finding it very effective. And anything that we can do to help widen the number of people that are properly applying it is supported by them, because many of them have stormwater ponds, et cetera. And so these chemicals and start running off into the stormwater ponds and accumulating those areas. So they realize they're part of the that to get the privates, and we have to have a solution that helps encourage them. The communities, government units are definitely jumping onto this because they see the benefits out there and the impacts it can have.
Representative Eklund.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. I appreciate hearing that, and I am on board with this bill. We need to reduce the salt use throughout the state. All you have to do is drive through high traffic areas in my district, especially where there's pine trees or evergreen trees. They seem to take the most beating from salt runoff. But one thing I've noticed in my time living down here is in the Twin Cities metro area, you don't plow snow like we do up in north. You just melt it. And I think that's where the real concern is. And I understand it. It's a problem. Where do you put it and all that kind of stuff. But it amazes me how fast the snow goes down here, and it's because the municipalities and applicators melt it rather than move it for the most part. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a few questions for Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, you know how I feel about this bill and how important it is to our lakes and bodies of water that are being so adversely affected by chloride. I'm hoping that the path this year looks better than it has in previous years. And if you could just let us know, give us a ballpark idea, what you see potentially happening. I hear rumors of some amendments coming from the other side that might be something that is helpful, but I was interested in your take on that. And hopefully we get this across the line. It's so important, and it's just been such a frustrating task trying to move this forward.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heinzman, for the question. And also thank you for your past support of this, addressing the salt chlorides that we've had out there. I know that we've worked more on this issue. And I think the path is a little bit more encouraging this year. I can tell you that over in the Senate, the bill's already had its first hearing. Moving over there. And, you know, the interesting thing, it always seems the Senate likes to try to do things a little differently than we do. And even though they'd like to do things a little differently, I'm very confident that the path through here, we will be going to judiciary next. I would imagine, because this has got the fiscal note on it, that it would be one of those things that I would expect, I would think that the chair here would probably be entertaining in the omnibus bill. And I think at that point, when it gets to conference committee, I think that while there might be some little differences between the two bills, I have high confidence that they'll be able to work it out by the end of the day and that we'll be able to get it done this time. And I think what derailed us last time is that COVID hit as we were getting to the time and we wanted to get this done. And that just threw us off and delayed us a couple of years. So I'm happy that we've got it going again. And I'm encouraged by the path I'm seeing. And the large number of groups out there that are working to help get it across the line is going to help make a big difference.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer, Representative Fisher. I'll be a little less nice. There are some out there that oppose the language because of the liability issue. And I hope that we recognize, not just in the legal community, but a number of other places and folks that are actively trying to push this, that it is necessary to have some protections built into this language to protect applicators from lawsuits. And we have, unfortunately, a scenario where the threat of a lawsuit is encouraging the massive over-application of Clorox. So I'm going to address that, and I appreciate Representative Fisher pushing this forward. I hope that we can keep those protections in there for applicators. That's my two cents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any other questions? I have a question for Ms. Taylor. Just going off of the testimony on the moving to liquid from granular. Ms. Taylor, is there anything to prohibit a city from passing an ordinance that would say that private individuals or the city itself to have, let's just say the city to use liquid instead of granular? Is there anything to prohibit that purchasing prohibition?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of anything that would prohibit them, but I wouldn't want to say for certain that they could go ahead and pass something like that.
And Ms. Taylor, is there anything that would prohibit an ordinance? There's no preemption on salt certification, is there?
Not that I'm aware of, no, sir.
And is there anything that would prohibit the state of Minnesota in its purchasing department to make a decision for buildings, I'm not talking about the streets, but I'm talking about the buildings, to go to liquid from granular?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of anything that would preempt them.
And is it possible, there's nothing that would preempt if the Minnesota legislature passed a law to say that over 3 years we transition, Minnesotans transition from a granular to a liquid product?
For state use, I'm not aware of anything that would prevent the state from doing so.
And members, I'm looking at the example of triclosan and coal tar. So coal tar, there were cities that made that decision to prohibit coal tar in their city through ordinance. And after several cities did it, then the state did. On triclosan, I believe the executive branch prohibited the use of triclosan with purchasing. And then after that, we were able to pass it with a phase out period. So I just wanted to raise those. Representative Heinzman. Your hand's still up, so just. Maybe it's not up. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Heinzman, did you have another question or is your hand still up from before?
It must not have been put down, so I'm not going to blame anybody, but I could, of course, put that down. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity for the bill. I hope everyone will support it. I want to say a big thanks to the testifiers. And specifically, I'd like to say a great big thank you to Ms. Sue Neeson, who's worked tirelessly over the many years to help get this across the line, and really thank her for her efforts and her commitment to get this done. With that, I'd like to move House File 2908 be recommended for re-referral to Judiciary and Civil Law. Did I get that phrasing proper, Chair?
Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 2908 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
All right. Chair Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasowick.
Aye.
Wasowick votes aye. Lead Heinzman.
Heinzman votes aye.
Heinzman aye. Representative Acomb.
Acomb aye.
Acomb votes aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland aye.
Ackland votes aye. Representative Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Backer votes aye. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Igo.
Igo aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee.
Lee aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson.
Nelson votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. The vote is 16 aye and 3 excused. You're muted.
Unanimous vote, the motion prevails. Members, we have been extremely efficient today and are done a half hour early. I want to kind of preview a little bit next week. We will have a bill that is being introduced today, which is the governor's drought relief package. It is DNR funding for tree loss and then an ag disaster relief package. They are combined. The ag portion was heard on the ag committee yesterday and was moved to Ways and Means. We will be hearing the environment portion, the DNR portion, on Tuesday and passing that to Ways and Means. So then they will be put back together in the Ways and Means Committee for Disaster Relief. I believe we are also hearing an audit report on the petroleum fund that's going to be released shortly. And is there anything else, Mr. Strohmeyer, that we have posted?
No, that's the only thing that's posted right now.
Members, are there any other questions or before we adjourn? Seeing none, we are